Welcome back to the Exterminatus Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name's Eric. I'm one of your hosts, and I'm finally joined by my better half, Raymond. Thank you for coming back.
It's great to be back.
I flew solo last week. It was so lonely. I was stuttering the whole time. I really did not know what to do without you. It was really weird. So glad to have you back. So as many of you might know, yeah, Ray, you are working full-time in school full-time, so you just got kind of lambasted with schoolwork last week. So are you?
Yeah, things get crazy.
Yeah, things do get crazy. So yeah, once in a while in life, we have to be adults and actually get stuff done. So try to do the best we can to get our hobby still in there. Speaking of hobby, some news to report on. Officially, not a whole lot this week. A lot of AOS, a lot of... Shadespire and all these other random games. Big things that we are waiting on. We're still waiting on the fall FAQ. This GW said it would be done after Adepticon. Well, it's been a week. Sometime in April. So we've got, you know, about less than 2 weeks. So hopefully it's coming soon. But today the Games Workshop giant survey went out.
And if you haven't done it, you need to do it now. Like, listen to us while you do it.
Yeah, exactly. And you can do it. I was actually doing it at work. and Mondays are our busiest day with payroll and all that. But it was really interesting. They had a lot of great questions, especially if you play multiple systems. And Ray, you asked me this question earlier. If there's one thing you would change or like to see happen, what would that be?
Well, I'll tell you what I answered. I want more Primarchs.
Really?
I straight up told them I want more Primarchs.
Interesting. I told them I wanted a guidelines for terrain. Like, how much goes on the table? Where does it go on the table? You know, what? How is this game meant to be played? So it can, because it makes such a difference between Planet Bowling Ball versus Planet City Fight. It's it'd be nice to see what were the designers' intentions of what this would look like. They get it. They're trying to sell terrain, so they're probably going to tell you, fill the table. But,
you know, honestly, I think their original intent was for the people playing the game to do that, to make that decision. Of course, it doesn't help for tournaments, but...
No. Now, over the weekend, I was playing Kill Team with my son, and interesting enough, they, in Kill Team rules, they actually do have suggested terrain setups for the missions. So I was like, oh, that's interesting. The other thing, too, just trying to get used to Kill Team, what a big difference it is when you have to declare charges during the movement phase. game came down to it where my son had to declare a charge, and he failed it, and I was double-checking the rules like 3 or 4 times. You fail a charge, you're pretty much done. No shooting phase for you. And so that cost him the game, because if he had made the charge... Even if he doesn't kill my guy holding objective, that would have, it would have been contested. I lose 2 points, and then if he kills me, then I lose 2 points, and he gains a point. So the difference between a possible tie and a possible win, as it pans out, he did fail the charge, so he's just kind of sitting there in the wind, and I'm like, aha, the objective is mine, 2 points. So definitely some interesting that and the lack of the character rule that you don't have to. Shoot the closest model in that game is also very different. So he's like punking my aspiring champion left and right. I'm like, stop that.
So was he playing Primaris Ultramarines like I saw the painted pictures of?
No, actually, he's playing Gene Stealer Cult. I was shocked. I was like, and they work differently. And there's no blip markers in Kill Team. They get a, on a 4+, they get a free 6-inch move at the start of the game. Now I'm playing. Because you're playing on a smaller table, that's actually a big deal. So, but yeah, he has a whole bunch of neophyte hybrids running around, and as he gets more models, we'll probably add to that. Trying to figure out what, because you definitely do not have the same unit selection that you have available between the two games, and also the point values are different. So that's something to keep in mind. But. It was fun. It was a really good time. Definitely brushing up on the skills, and it's kind of nice. Like a good, felt like, you know, I was getting some good 40K practice in as well.
You just weren't playing your faction.
I was not. No, I was playing Chaos Space Marines. I wanted to do something different. Last game I played Drukhari, and that whole threat overwhelming definitely overwhelmed them. So being that he was playing, when he was playing Mechanicus that time, so now he was playing Gene Stealer Cult. I didn't want to do like assault on assault. So I didn't have, I was going to play Death Watch, but I didn't have fully assembled yet. I didn't want to make him wait. So I took out my Chaos Space Marines. So I had like a handful of Marines to his, like, I was outnumbered like 2-1 in bottles. It was a lot of fun.
Not quite the setting for you to long to play your Chaos Marines again, is it?
Not quite, but it still was fun. It was definitely, you got that moving Marine feel, because one thing that they do differently, they have a interesting mechanic. Now, when you lose your last wound, you roll a die. On a 4, 5, or 6, you're dead. But on 1, 2, or 3, you get what's called a flesh wound. And that means you are -1 to hit, both close combat and shooting. And then every time you take another wound, you add 1 to the die. So it increases your chances of dying. Now, all Marines, Heretics, and Imperial can ignore the first flesh wound.
Nice.
So that, yeah. So as he's coming at me with all his shotguns that are strength 3, and yeah, there's not a lot of bone saws and stuff. He had like a heavy stubber and the seismic cannon. And that was one of the things he was learning the hard way about moving and shooting and how that can really slow you down. That 3-up armor and then ignoring the first flesh wound. My Marines were pretty durable compared to his 5-up armored neophytes running around. But the problem was, I just didn't have enough shots. And so the first mission we played, he actually won the first game. I won the second game. It is the first game. He just flooded this one flank. And I'm like, I don't have enough bullets. I can't kill him fast enough. And that was, the getting used to. That's where I made the mistake. I was like, I moved the position. I'm going to shoot 3 of them and charge the other 2 models. And I'm like, wait, I have to charge in the movement phase. Ah!
You gotta pay attention to the stuff.
I'd be
like
curious
that.
To see, but I'd be curious to see if 40K does changes that. If they move the charges to the movement phase, it would definitely shake up the game considerably. It'd be a very different game. Other thing that's shaking up the game. This was from unofficial sources, so Spence, these are your typical rumors. Supposedly, there's another box set coming out. Surprise, surprise. And in the box set, they talk about the Lion. That's necessarily the Primarch that Rey wants. But they talk about a Dark Angel's Force, the Fury of the Lion or something like that. What makes this funny is that, Dark Angels, big deal. Yeah, their opponent is an Imperial Force. So I guess we're done hiding the fact that Dark Angels are actually traitors.
I just want to say this right now. The Primarch I want to come out is Perturabo.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. I definitely think we need an Imperial one just to balance things out, but I love Fulgrim. I love him to come out right now, but I could see just for balancing out the game, it would be nice to see like Leban Russ or even Vulcan at this point.
Honestly, I was talking to someone earlier today about this, and the Lion is pretty much set to be the next one out because he's basically in place, but I think we'd be better off with like Russ, or I actually said Dorne, because he kind of had that ending that leaves everything in question, because the only thing they found was his hand.
So gross.
So
not sure. Like I said, I know the Chaos side more than I know the Imperial side, so I'm like, I'm kind of grasping at straws. I really like the idea of the Lion because I really want Luther to come back too and have a full-fledged Fallen Codex come out with it. But we shall see if that ever happens.
Yep.
All right. We had a busy weekend of tournament coverage. We're going to go over 5 of those events, all GT and higher. Give you kind of a breakdown of the top 8 right after this break.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Welcome back after the break. It's now time for the tournament report. So one of the things, there was a lot of discussion prior to this. So we were on a show, if you listened to us 2 weeks ago, we had Mark Wright on talking about the new Best in Faction. So those rules allegedly went into effect this weekend. And sure enough, this morning, lots of internet pundits and trolls went to town on TO saying, hey, you counted this guy as Best in Faction when he had a soup list. So some of the TOs have pushed back a little bit, saying like, well, we appreciate the ITC ruling, but we also put a cap on you cannot make your list changes and submit your list 3 weeks in advance type thing. So we're not going, if you thought you were coming in with a soup list that would count as Best in Faction, we're going to allow it and then moving forward. So although officially this was supposed to be the weekend, we see the change. Some tournaments are holding back on that a little bit. So give the guys a break. I think know the background before you throw them under the bus. One of the things I did thought was a little hilarious, though. One of the tournaments we're going to talk about was in the backyard of the ITC. And one of the members of the ITC who runs it, he remained anonymous, but his name rhymes with Reese. Never uploaded his list, but he did post it on the Frontline Gaming website. So I thought that was kind of funny. It's just like, wow, there's not a whole lot of uploaded lists in this tournament. But we'll get to that later.
Demon, fear my wrath.
We're going to start this week in the heart of the South in Marietta, Georgia. Warzone Gigabytes 2 event there. Let's go over your top eight. Looks something like this. There is a tie for seventh between Donovan Saleo and Get Parried. Donovan was playing Tau Empire versus Get Parried playing Chaos. Sixth place, you have Robert Birmingham with Imperium. Max Style, excuse me, sir. Sorry about that, Mac. Max Style with Death Watch. I love his team, by the way. He's Team Go Gorilla Biscuits. That's an awesome name. tied. Are they tied? Yes, they are. They are tied. With Mac is Alexis Putt with Harlequins. Third place, Damian Owen with Cult Mechanicus. Second place, Michael Sells with Chaos. And Chris Blackburn takes the top spot with Eldari.
Brothers, the great enemy approaches.
Our next event goes by two different names. Really not sure which is the correct name because both are listed in Best Scopes Carries. It could be the Kingsman GT. It could be the Huskarl GT. Long story short, they're both in Topeka, Kansas. They're both being held at Huskarl Games and Hobbies. And your top eight looks this way. Eighth place, Dan Sammons with Orcs. A tie for sixth place between Bo CS with Tau Empire and Trainer Wolf with Inari. A tie for fourth place between Matt Neely with Tau Empire and Rain Man with Chaos. By the way, that's something I've been seeing a lot, Ray, is this season we're seeing a lot more alternative names and code names and all kinds of funky stuff.
Which is funny because they said they were going to try to stop that. I think they're
just
I think people are trying to push using them. I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I get it. And I think it's kind of fun. I know esports guys do that all the time. If you can brand it and get sponsorship for it, hey, go for it. What would be your name?
I have no idea. I'm not creative like that. I'd let someone else pick it for me.
Yeah.
No matter how bad that ended up being.
Yeah, that's always the hard part. Yeah, I'd be like, that'd be something terrible.
You never know. Look at what happened with Don.
That's true. That worked out well for him. So Who knows? Anyway, third place, Scott Thompson with Imperial Knights. Second place, Trent Northington with Gene Stealer Cult. And the winner of the Huskarl / Kingsman GT is none other than Tim Royers with Imperial Knights. By the way, friend of the show, Tony Thibault, came in 15th place with his Inari. So great job there, Tony. And interested to see. Supposedly that White Dwarf comes out in 2 weeks with the big Inari update. Curious to see what that brings. There's not been a single peep, word, rumor, trickle, nothing about it. So that has been kept under wraps pretty well.
To the last man and the last round!
Moving on to our first major of the weekend, we're going to talk about the Dallas Open GT, which is now actually a major. Huge event, also brings out quite a bit of the top players from the Midwest area as well as the Texas area. So your top eight looks something like this. Once again, we do have a tie for seventh place between Thomas Reedy. You may know him as Goat Boy from Bell of Lost Souls. Interesting, Thomas is not playing Chaos. He's playing Imperial Knights, which surprised me because most of his articles lately have been about the new Chaos Space Marine releases. Also in seventh place with him, featuring his Gene Stealer Cult Army, is John Lennon. He was flirting with the top spot in the ITC for the last few weeks and also making a pretty big trip there from Florida all the way out to Dallas. So nice job there. Sixth place, Andrew Ford, Imperial Knights. Fifth place, Colin McDade with an Imperium. Fourth place, Will Albalez with Tau Sept. Third place, Philip Junghans with Aldari. Second place, Nick Rose with Gene Stealer Cult. And in first place, Matthew Ali with Thousand Suns. One thing I thought was rather interesting about this tournament, the top four, so William, Philip, Nick, and Matthew, have one thing in common. They all went undefeated. So hopefully the guys can maybe good to see some growth. Maybe add a sixth round to split it up a little bit. But interesting to see some of the lists. We're starting to see a little bit of the change towards best in faction. We're also seeing as these larger events coming in the new scoring system. So Matthew Ali, for example, with his Thousand Suns list, picked up 232 points for winning that particular event. And then you scroll down, you know, we talk about our top eight. Thomas Reedy, who came in, you know, tied for seventh in this event, he's still walking out with 199 points, whereas under last year's tournament schedule, he'd probably be walking out with like 70. So nice to see that.
And you know what? Looking at this, the only way they'd have one person for sure undefeated would be if they did seven rounds.
Yeah, I was taking a quick look here. They had 125 players. That's a huge event. Oh, by the way, your congratulations to Derek Best with Harlequins. You are the winner of the Wooden Spoon for the Dallas GT. Going a perfect 0-5 in last place with 59 points.
Take me to the front.
Which brings us to our last event of note for this weekend, and that would be the Broadside Bash in lovely San Diego, California. Now, a little bit of concern for next year for the Broadside Bash. It's been one of the long-standing events there in the West Coast circuit, and they were tied to a larger game con. So there's like LARPing and live action role-playing and a whole bunch of other events. Well, the convention itself declared earlier that this is their last year. So talking to the TOs from the Broadside Bash, they don't know what their plans are for next year. They're not as definitive in saying that they'll be done. They may latch on to another event. They may do be a freestanding event. So best of support to the guys from the Broadside Bash in terms of how they move forward and continue to grow the event from there. So keep our eyes open there. Also, when you're looking at the scoring, you see a lot of scores of 24s and 12s. They had a very interesting scoring system. It was a pure win-loss format. You got 24 points for a win, 16 points for a tie, 12 points for a loss. So one of the reasons that you'll see when you look at the scoring, it doesn't matter whether you win by 1 point or 400 points, you got 24 points towards your win total. So you see a lot of ties. It also made for some awkwardness. There were apparently like 37 people with the same score going into round two, and there was like no real way to differentiate who's where. So it became kind of a random draw even on turn two. So anyway, moving forward from there, let's go over what I think is the top eight, but there's a lot of ties here. So these are all the folks that went 4-1, or roughly had 4,108 points. So you had Junior, I'm having trouble with your last name, Apple Jalay. That's not even close. Anyway, he's from Team Zero Comp, and he played Imperium, and you're going to like it. Next place, Raymond Almuda with Eldari. Cooper Waddell with Hive Forces of the Hive Mind, which is the new faction which combines Gene Sealer Cult with Tyranids. Oh, God, not this bomb. Hey. Our contributor quite often from previous shows, Don Hosen, with his Chaos Space Marine list. Also, Craig went 4-1 this past weekend. Jason McKenzie with Cult Mechanicus joins that group. Paul McKelvey, if you heard that name before, he's one of the architects of Beskos Pairings with his Tau Empire, and he's been continually one of the best Tau players for the last 3 years. Also going 4-1, Eli Williams with Goffs, as well as Mark Carrion with Black Legion, also went 4-1. As we get closer to the top here, Jeff Robinson making a tremendous run. He won for his first four games and finally lost in the last round. And he was playing an Imperial Soup list, but most of that list was actually Custodes. So it was a very interesting list. Also contributor to the show, Daniel Olivas with Eldari. He also went 4-1. But your top two players, both of these players going undefeated. And second place, Reese Robbins. You may have heard of him. Frontline Gaming fame with his Imperium list, but your top player for this year's Broadside Blash, and hopefully not the last one, is Brian Poulin with Tau Sept. But yeah, going through some of the lists, some people have definitely, you're starting to see a lot more, since it's trying to be best in faction and be like mono faction, saw a lot more brigades, saw a lot more 2 and 3 battalions, a lot less outriders and vanguards and supreme commands and stuff like that. It's a lot of big, you know, big detachments really fleshing out some of these armies. So could be the start of something new as we see the meta change one more time. I'm sure it'll change again once that new FAQ comes out.
If we're not going to cover it, I do at least want to give a bit of a shout out. There was another event this last weekend. It was Warriors Weekend 2. That was in Canada. It was won by Jim Vessel playing his Chaos.
Oh, let's take a look at that. Because Jim was first place in the ITC. Yeah, let's take a look at that. Actually, a couple Americans making the trip up there. So, eighth place, we have Jason Arsenault with Orcs. Nick Hollenschmidt with Drukhari. Sixth place, Kevin Cuccio.
Devin.
Devin, hope I pronounced that right. Sorry about that. He's playing Chaos. Evan Peters, because it's all capitals. I wonder if that's what he does. We called attendance in school. Your name, sir? Evan Peters! Anyway, he's playing Imperium. JT McDowell with Drukhari. Third place, Wyatt Jensen with Orcs. Cameron Bowder with Imperium. And your winner, as we spoiled earlier from Team Canhammer, Jim Vessel with Chaos Space Marines. Actually, it was like Chaos Soup. What is he playing these days? Yeah, a lot of demons. And a little bit of, he's playing the same list we talked about before, where he's got mostly demons and he adds Armon with those Hellforge Contemptor Dreadnoughts with the conversion beamers that everybody's like, what do they do again? Yeah, they cause lots of mortal wounds when you blink. So, very interesting. So, congratulations there. Sorry, I didn't overlook that. So, those are our big events. Any other events that I may have overlooked there, Ray?
That's all I found.
All right.
Which is quite a few.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, if you're running an event and you want to let us get the word out on your event ahead of time, hit us up on Facebook. We'd be more than happy to give some shout out to your event. We talk about usually the events the week coming, but if you want a little more lead time, let us know. We'd be more than happy to promote your event here on the show, such as what I'm about to do now. Hey, our event, which we hold every year, is been booked already for the 2020 season. So don't let this sneak up on you. So March 14th and 15th, officially back at the Glendale Civic Center, will be the Scorched Earth Open for the year 2020. So super excited about that. Great venue. We had a great event there last year. It was like, what, 2 months ago? But we are booked and ready to go. And we'll be promoting the snot out of it for the next 10 months and love to see you guys there. So take a look at that. If you'd like to see us talk more about your show or come on the show and talk about your own event, hit us up on Facebook. I'll be more than happy to help you. All right. Can I take a break now?
Yes.
All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to talk about where does your event fit into the schedule and have we reached a level of saturation at this point? I'll talk about that right after the break. All right, we're back from the break, and one of the things that Ray and I have been noticing as we report week after week to give you up-to-date scores and highlights of all the big tournaments and the previous week is there's a lot more of them week after week. So the question is, growth is good, but at what point is it getting too big? And who decides at that point? So we look at this week, at least they were kind of spread out a little bit better. So, you know, we had a big event in the West Coast. We had one big event in Kansas, one big event in Dallas. And one thing we didn't talk about, there was a large team event at the Battle for Salvation up in right outside New York City there in Nyack. So it's one of those, you know, sooner or later, there's at what point are there almost too many events where folks may, you know, have, is there too many events at this point?
I think it's possible. You know, we had what we talked about, 6 or 7 just now, GT level events just this last weekend. Now, luckily, they were pretty well spread out, but sometimes that doesn't happen. A great example is when we ran ours. We did ours on the same weekend as Dice Hammer. I don't think we're really thinking about that. It's just kind of how things worked out. But there were a few people that we might have expected to see that we didn't see because, you know, they chose to go to the one closer to home, and I kind of can't blame them for
absolutely.
That.
And actually, I didn't find out until after the fact, actually until we did the show that following Monday. Not only was that the big event in California, but there was another one in Utah, which was actually a fundraiser. It was a charity event. And we know there's at least 6 or 7 guys that would make the trip from Utah to our event. And we know there's at least, you know, 6. I remember going through the roster. There's about 6 guys that are regulars of ours that come from California to our events. 10 extra guys, that's the difference between us being a GT versus us being a major. And, you know, it's one of those, you know, we felt like we put our event out first. I don't know if they didn't see it. I definitely didn't see their events when we put ours in. There was talk about moving the event, and it wasn't able to because of the venue. And it hurt because we would have definitely gone to either of those 2 events had we not had our own event. And so likewise, they lost out on probably about 7 or 8 guys that showed up that could have gone to their event. So it's one of those, yeah, make sure, you know, who's the governing body that says, hey, or is there a way to self-police that say, don't book on this weekend because this weekend is on there. So we talked about that, about Scorched Earth, you know, when are we going to move, you know, should we move the event? Part of it, yeah, I admit I'm a little bit stubborn. Part of it's also there's only certain weekends I can do it because of my family commitments. And also, I don't know if anybody wants to come to Phoenix in July. So it's kind of like I'm trying to avoid midsummer. But it really came down to, like, one of the things we heard, the news about Broadside possibly going away. And people were like, well, do we take their spot, you know, type thing. And I go like, well, let's find out if they're really done. They made a switch or something like that. Likewise, BAO, they switched their date because they latched on with a larger convention. So if we had not moved our date from May to March, we'd be competing with Bay Area Open. So there's a lot of movement trying to find the right rate. And at this point, if you're a new tournament organizer and you want to run a new event, trying to find that your space, your niche in the calendar is pretty hard right now.
Which that leads me more to believe that we are getting close to that saturation point. I mean, there's nothing wrong with having a large amount of RTTs. I mean, you can have an RTT in every city of every state, and for the most part, I think everybody's going to be fine. But once you start looking at GT level events, I really feel like there is, if you've got more than 5 going on in the United States, you might have to start worrying about whether or not you're one person's losing for the other, especially if two or more of those are happening close together. Ours, you know, we had three GTs in 3 states that were touching each other. it's not quite so bad if, you know, you've got three going on and one's in, you got one in California, you got another one in Missouri, and then the other one's up in Maine. That's not as big of a deal.
Having lived in, when you having gone to college in Maine, I would love to see a GT in Maine, by the way. So
I just gave the example for the sake of, you know, it's at that point they're far separated, so it's less likely that you're gonna lose people for in your tournament because there's another tournament.
And think,
but yeah, we, yeah.
No, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. When you think about that, you look at, you know, if you cut the country into four parts, and maybe add, you know, some, just the thing on the U.S. side of things, and you could conceivably at best have 48 events, you know, one each month. It's sometimes a little harder to go to multiple GTs and that require travel within the same month for some players. So you're definitely going to see that. So like you said, if there's an East Coast event, there's a, and East Coast is pretty general. I get it. If you live in New York, the chances are if you're driving to all the way down to Atlanta for an event, pretty slim to none. But we've done it. You know, back in the day, there was a big event in North Carolina, and a lot of the guys from the Northeast would drive, make the trip for that. But the idea is that somebody from, but then you see like John Lennon, he's from Florida, and he made it all the way to the Dallas GT as opposed to going to the event in Marietta, Georgia. So, now, how far people are willing to travel? We see a lot of Americans still attending quite a few of these Canadian tournaments now. Maybe, you know, that's kind of what is the, you know, the new travel threshold. And I guess the next question comes in. At first, it seemed like with all these tournaments, you didn't need to travel to be successful, but maybe you do still.
So in this case, I think if the GT organizers were to actually work together, I think we could see this potential problem get solved in a way that, you know, you don't have to worry about, you know, one or two GTs taking from the others and, I don't know, suddenly becoming majors. If they work together, I think that, you know, a schedule could be determined where everybody wins, you know, the tournament goers and the TOs. So, I mean, there's this great thing called a calendar. And if everybody were, you know, there's not that, there's a large amount of GTs, but when you get right down to it, some of these people are running two or three. You know, you might have the same tournament organizer running as many as three or four GTs, or, you know, even major events. So when you really look at the tournament organizer behind the tournament, you might see that, you know, 20 or 30 GTs might be run by 10 guys. And at that point, you know, if everybody works together, hey, let's, I hate to go back to it, but again, it's where seeing tournaments happen is where it all started for me, is back with Magic. They would create a schedule. Everybody knew, you know, during, for the, at least for the most part, during that year, when the big events were going to be. So, you know, people could plan much, a lot in advance. You know, they could set up, you know, a whole year, okay, I'm going to go to this tournament this date, I'm going to go to that tournament that date. And because it was, it's all organized by one entity in this case, but still, you have that level of organization created, and, you know, the players are going to be able to see what they can go to, when they can prepare for it. The tournament organizers can work together, so they're not stepping on each other's toes. All of a sudden, everybody's got to do it the same weekend. So you get something like this. There's 50 states. I think we really only see tournaments in maybe 20 of them at the most. Maybe not even that many, maybe more like 10 for GT-level events at least. So if let's just say there's 10. That means if we do, you know, in 12, just doing, let's, you know, take 2 months off for a downtime. You've got 10 months in a year. That means even if only one state did it at a time, that's 1 month that's where a state could do it. Realistically, you could do three or four when timed out correctly per month without it causing a, you know, an issue with attendance. So at that point, in a 10-month period, there's no reason why you couldn't have two GTs, depending on how things work out, maybe even three per state. Within that 10-month period, it's not too hard to, you know, it's not too hard to, you know, figure that out, as long as there is enough organization and, you know, discussion between the tournament organizers to really work it out.
When you really look at it, the guys in the Midwest probably do it the best. When we had Kevin Shook on from Preferred Enemies podcast, they talked about how the Midwest Conquest guys and the Renegade GT guys all communicate with one another and actually support each other. You know, some of the prize packs is you get free tickets from one event to attend the next event. So you're almost incentivized to go, and you can kind of get on this winning streak of going to other events. Also, you know, just recently, if you haven't seen it yet, I think it's only on the ITC tournament organizers Facebook page. They now have a fill out this form and submit this for your event, and it's a lot more comprehensive. So that's something new, whereas before it was sort of send them an email and it says, yep, I'm running an event on this weekend. And sometimes it was like a 2 or 3 week delay before it actually showed up on the website. So it's interesting that they're making that step forward to being sort of a, hey, bro, we'd like to track of what's going on out there and hopefully organize this a little tighter. But I don't know who's going to be the guy that says, you guys have a conflict, one of you is going to have to back down. I don't know who's going to say that. You know, I was telling Ray a little bit about one of my favorite sports, which I think is the one professional sport that best mimics where 40K, competitive 40K, at least as a sport would be, and that'd be NASCAR. And they just announced a 2020 schedule, and they mixed up the races a little bit. You know, some of the races were in a plum spot. Some of them changed the dates. Some of them are not in the marquee spot. For example, if you live in Florida, you're a little upset because you used to have the championship race. We used to be in Homestead, Florida. Not the case anymore. I think you're the first round of the playoffs. You know, our hometown here, Phoenix, is now going to be the home of the championship race, which is, I thought was interesting. And so, depending on where you are in the schedule, I think one of the short tracks is considered also one of the playoff, but also one of the cutoff races. So it kind of mixed things up in terms of a fan's priority, especially if they're willing to travel to these events. But also as a tournament organizer, if you're running one of these events, where does my event stack up in against the competition can help you figure out, am I the top event for the weekend or am I one of many that weekend? And so we're curious to see how that works out and how that all plays out. But yeah, we're getting close to that saturation point, which is something that, I don't know, I didn't think this would ever happen. I thought it wasn't too long ago, I think it was about 3-4 years ago, we were thinking that the local tournament scene was on life support. If you weren't running one of the big guys like Adepticon or Nova, you were struggling to get people to show up. And now it's not the case. So, guys, agree with us, disagree with us, let us know on our Facebook page. Head up there, leave a comment. Great to read your comments next week's show. Get you guys involved in the discussion. Maybe you guys are seeing something different in your local area, but definitely starting to see a lot more tournaments within our 3, 4, 5 state radius at this point and developing the communication. Plus, those guys who run those tournaments in the local area, reach on out. We'd love to work together with you guys to make sure we can support each other in a healthy way by communicating. So before we wrap up the show, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back, go over the ITC Top 10, as well as next week's ITC events. See you right after the break. Welcome back after the break. It's time for your ITC Top 10 as we talk about this currently this Monday evening, almost Tuesday, April 15th. So if you haven't got your taxes in, oops. Anyway, those of you, 12 of these 10 individuals are not in trouble with the IRS. Definitely one of them's not because he's Canadian. Anyway, 10th place, Shane Watts. Sitting in 10th place with four events and 668 points. 9th place, Scott Carnes. 8th place, after a strong showing at Broadside Bash, Ray Almuda moves into 8th place. James Kelling hangs into the 7th place spot. Bethany Taylor holds on to 6th place. Michael Serapata, with an even 700 points, occupies the 5th place spot. Scott Horace in 4th place with a slim 2-point lead over Michael Serapata, an even smaller lead. Looks like a 2/100ths of a point for 3rd place is John Lennon, the Pride of Florida. 2nd place, Daniel Hesters with 714 points. But the crazy Canadian in 1st place, Jim Vessel, he has almost a 300-point lead over Daniel Hesters for 1st place with 1,047 points. Having a tough time following me from the visual standpoint, check out our Facebook page later this week. We may have a little surprise when it comes to the ITC Top 10. In the meantime, Ray, what events do we have coming up in the ITC next week?
All right, this next weekend looks to be a little bit calmer. We've got the Warzone Central Coast 40K ITC Tournament at Entertainment Grounds in West Gosford. The Wet Coast GT 2019 40K event in Richmond, British Columbia. And then we have the Silicon Valley Smash
at
Game Castle Mountain View in Mountain View, California. Interestingly enough, they're already calling it the Brandon Grant's 29th GT win.
Nah.
It's in the name.
It's in the name. Well, no pressure, Brandon, but I'm sure he usually does very well at that event. So we're looking forward to giving you all the results from those events and more. Also, look to our Facebook page for any breaking news during the week. We're still anxiously awaiting the spring FAQ. So if we find anything else, we'll see that first on our Facebook page. Also, quick reminder, if you like what you hear here tonight, leave us a comment. Leave us a review on iTunes or Spotify. We are on both platforms. Also, if you've not gotten a chance to fill out your survey for the Games Workshop, get that done. And here's your opportunity to reach out. For many years, they've ignored their fan base. Here's a rare opportunity to get back and give back to them. Give them your peace of mind in a respectful manner so they know what direction they need to take the game to. Plus, you got a chance of winning a Sisters of Battle army. That's pretty cool.
So, yeah.
By the way, that was one of the news items we forgot to talk about. They confirmed a new Penitent engine model coming out. So, very cool. So, as we wrap things up, thank you very much for listening to the Exterminatus Podcast. My name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus Podcast.